Mind over matter. Overcompensating. Overstatements. Crookedness relating. The soul's churn in return. Mental overstimulation. One word. Riveting. It tethers my pilot. Streams that are promised to make seeking less. I am the host of Poetry Journal Podcast, and I'm hoping for a few more people to kind of tune in today and just share their opinion on certain topics that we have to speak about. But in any case, let me start by sharing a quote from a piece that I kind of prepared. As it goes, what's life without the need to express? To share the last of my signature pertaining to thoughts of the world. Watch me in the premise as my DNA unfurl, seeing what life and the world alike had revealed. Like the untimely spawn, I'm diligent to the cause. To take what is or has gone and make it take off through timely proclamations to approximate a new depiction of where growth has reborn. Tell it to the world if I fail to scale it or reinvent but nothing like a counterfeit. Yes, and there was three things I kind of went into, and it came up with three different questions. The first one was, the first thing I discovered was, and this is all sourced from the Independent newspaper.
Okay.
It says almost half of young Black Britons plan to migrate, and it's all primarily related to reasons
of
racism experience.
This is just points
basically. This is the second one that I found. Dancehall legend Tipperary. Are you familiar with Tipperary?
Yes.
Okay. Whew. Yeah. So he has this. He's got this quote, and it basically says, "I stick to my roots." In fact, I think that might be the title of his book that came out. I'm not too sure. I'd have to research that one. So don't take that with a pinch of salt. And this was this, but this specifically was taken from a quote from an interview I researched. And on top of that, shout out to FD. Appreciate you sharing some support. I remember we had a little exchange the night before. Yes, and the third thing I wanted to mention was, and it was pretty much just an icing, not necessarily, you know, want to go too much into it, but it was something I read and I thought, you know, just to share. And it basically says, Shunock condemns N-word slur found in the official government document, which I thought was interesting. You know, just the thought of that. So these are the questions.
I swear I heard you say something about, this might be related to question one, it's about Black people and minorities.
Yeah, it was. So the first question pretty much was, is the plight of Black population and minorities still the most part the voice of the unheard? And if so, do most of us even care?
That's an interesting question. Let me start with the newspaper article, because it's not the first time I've heard other Black people talk about moving out of the UK. I've heard this quite a lot in the last 6 months. In fact, I remember speaking to a young lady getting a Jamaican passport, and another guy getting a passport because he wanted to go back to Ghana. So it's been accelerated. I feel like I can hear myself.
Feedback.
Yeah.
Just give me a sec. How about now?
Hello? Yeah, that's perfect now. It's perfect.
How about now?
That's perfect. Yeah, that's much better. Thank you. So this has been accelerated because of the increase in, I'm going to say, mix of perception and mix of fact around discrimination. This is a hard one to pinpoint because I'm never gonna say no if you say are we ever gonna be, in relation to the next question, are we ever gonna be is it have a presence or visibility? You said something along those lines.
Well, let's start at the top. Let's start with the first one first, and we just re-unpack the rest of it. Is the plight of black population and minorities still, for the most part, the voice of the unheard? So maybe just give me like a yes or no to begin, to start, and then, you know, you could probably share your reasons, because I'm sure it sounds to me like you have a lot to say about this one.
Yeah. In the rounds, yes. I've got to say yes.
Okay. Now break it down.
And the reason why I'm saying yes is because unless something really significant, something big happens in the news, something related to racism, something that forces its way into the press, obviously disregarding certain media outlets like the Daily Mail and others that are more right wing, in my opinion. A lot of the issues that are related to racism that are visible are almost made invisible, or at least translucent. They're minimized, in my opinion. But the reason why I hesitate a bit with that is because what I've noticed is there's almost like a trend with like who, let's say, populist culture decides to point fingers at, like to highlight issues. So I would say that black issues of discrimination are minimized, but to a lesser extent now than other brown people, simply because of the recent issues around immigration and anti-Islamist statements. So you kind of need to almost break that down, I think. If you're going to talk about black and minority ethnics, you can't, in my opinion, use a catch-all for all of those categories. I'll start with what I know best, which is black people.
Okay, let's stick to what we know then. Let's just talk about black population. Because I don't really want to go into innuendos or anything. I just want to be direct.
Yeah. A lot of, should I say, smaller issues, maybe issues that we face individually, are somewhat diminished, sort of kept quiet. And they're kept quiet because there's been a lot of push by government and organizations to bring in policies that are supposed to look at equalities and diversity, but these policies are like band-aids. My personal experience in any business, even in government, actually, sometimes in government it's worse. Now, I say these act as band-aids because they kind of minimize the idea of there being a voice, that there is discrimination. There is still discrimination, but I believe it gets over, the voice gets sort of silenced out. It's overheard by louder voices about EDI. Yes.
Okay, that's good. That's good. So now that we've established that, now, because I know what your standpoint is, so now the real question for me is, do most of us even care if that's the case? Do most of us even care?
I think, unfortunately, unless you're talking about specific corners of the community,
yeah,
then I think a lot of us are sort of ambivalent or apathetic to it, unfortunately. But then I also say, to a certain extent, maybe I've taken that. Maybe I've been that way sometimes. It's easy to fall into that trap of at least perceiving as if you don't care, or just thinking, oh, you know, shrug your shoulders, move yeah. on. I think a lot of people don't care. They get on with their own lives. They look after themselves and their own.
You know what? Yeah, you make some valid points, and that for me personally, it leads to another question that just off the top of my head. Do you believe that, just from what you can see and your experiences and what you know of the world, especially let's speak about here in London or just, you know, our environment, do you believe we live in a chameleon type of culture? Everybody is trying to adapt, trying to get along to be all right with getting along, basically.
Oh, you mean sort of go to get along, kind of. I do believe we live in a chameleon culture. It exists on all levels. Now, do you want us to just stick to the idea of chameleon culture in terms of how people feel about discrimination, or do you want to talk about this in general?
I want to speak about more the acting, the acting upon how do we paint these type of facets of chameleon culture? How do we, you know, what would you say are some of the different ways people go about making this happen, making this a factor?
Okay.
We go along to get along, you know, certain things.
We go along to get along because we consider various things we take part in life as needs or even desires. So I don't know if you, do you know Maslow's hierarchy of needs?
I do.
So my opinion is, or my belief is, that loads of people are willing to wear masks in order to get some of those needs met at a base level. For example, a lot of people aren't the same people when they're at work. They wear masks. There's the same way that people wear masks with certain social groups, their church or whatever, whoever it is. And that's a survival mechanism because they're seeking acceptance from another community or group of people, so they can't fully be themselves, or they don't, at least they don't believe they can. It's a protection mechanism. It's a part of the mechanism that we call the ego, and I say this because it's not necessarily a negative thing to have an ego. It's a way in which we use it when we suddenly think that we are the ego or the mask, and we realize that we're being ourselves. So everyone wears a mask to some extent. Some people don't know it, and some people have completely confused their own real identity with the mask or masks that they wear. Some people don't even know themselves.
Yeah. I think the term, the specific term that was eluding me earlier on was code switch.
Ah, yes, yes.
I think in this day and age, some of us might see it and might not recognize it, but essentially what we're looking at here are people code switching. You know, it's pretty much centered from the fact that, you know, most people are trying to go along to get along. You know, in the end, you end up being somebody that code switches.
How do you tell if someone is code switching? You can't necessarily tell by their language unless they're deliberately using what they speak in one way in one environment, in another environment. Is that enough to code switch, or is it more to the substance of their talk? Are there things that we consider acceptable, or where's the line drawn? For example, when I speak with friends and family, the language I use is a little more loose than I would say at work.
Yeah.
Now, yeah. Am I code switching? Even though I know I have to put a veneer of sort of professionalism in the way I dress, yeah, and the way I talk, but I've never actually not been myself, in the sense of if someone asks me what I believe in, I never deviate from what I believe in. They know what I'm about outside of work. Where's the line drawn?
Well, I guess to begin with, I would say it begins with the culture. If you're changing from one culture to the other, I think that's the start of, that's where code switching begins, you know?
Can I just say something? Jake 24, you're out of order.
Nah, man, let the trolls troll, man. That's fine. So I would say it begins with the culture, you know? If you're buying into another culture, isn't that essentially what code switching is? Because when you think about like a workplace, that's a culture in itself, isn't it? You know,
yeah, it is.
You go in there and you have to acclimate, not because not necessarily you want to, but you're being paid to.
Yeah. Yeah. You're getting your need met. You're right. Not me in 2042. Yeah, it begins with the culture. So I agree with that completely.
Yeah, it's you know, it's a culture, and so I think sometimes, or I think a lot of times, it begins where, you know, a lot of males perhaps don't fit in or set into certain workplace, because, you know, as men, we're by nature disagreeable. And so to fit into a certain workplace, you have to buy into the culture. And, you know, I think it could be argued that we, by nature, we prefer to lead. And so to follow somebody is somewhat against our nature, because we normally prefer to butt heads, you know, and create for our own and lead ourselves. But, you know, when you go to a place, you're not necessarily looking to, I suppose you code switch, but for a prolonged period, a long-term period, to be like that, perhaps it does something to you. Do you get what I mean? There's a certain... there's a certain nerve that it keeps, you know, it gets numb after a while, because you're basically sensitizing yourself or desensitizing yourself to a degree to something that is not necessarily bodes well towards your nature as a person.
I can start with personal experience. that I've been in work environments where I've not been able to say what I wanted to say, and I've had opinions about people I've worked with, but then I've had to obviously cooperate. And there's a difference between cooperating and holding your tongue. Cooperation's healthy with other people, but then taking leadership or working with others where your values aren't necessarily aligned, but then you're both there to do a job, that itself takes a certain amount of effort and energy to do, and it can be quite draining, because at the end of the day, if the common goal that binds you and other people don't share the same values is to make money, then that is a struggle. Like that, it, broadly speaking, it can be a more universal concept, because by our very nature of us having to do a job, and a lot of us don't love our job, you might like certain aspects of it. You're very fortunate if you love your job, but the very nature that we're having to spend a third of our day, more if you're factoring sleep, obviously, to do something that our vision and ideals and values aren't necessarily aligned to, and the fact that society will make a decision of on our the value of us as productive human beings, even moral, you know, moral value, would eat away at anyone's conscious and self of being.
Makes sense. And so, I guess what I would ask you now is, knowing what it's doing to us, what would make it all right for somebody to kind of stay in such an environment where, you know, somewhat to a degree, you don't necessarily subscribe to it, but you're here because you have no choice, or you think you have no choice? Like, what was the, what would be the epitome of this code switching situation that you're in? Like, what would be the underlying reason that would really, you know, make somebody give somebody so much conviction, like they know, like this is it, like I have to
do it.
Yeah.
Well, the most obvious example I can think of is anyone who's got mouths to feed, obviously debts. My example is my mum, who worked three jobs at one point when I was a teenager.
Yeah.
And I know for a fact that she didn't like any of those jobs, but when you got two kids, you know, that's probably the most foundational thing about doing something you don't like doing or that conflicts with your true purpose.
Yeah.
Or conflicts with a purpose which you don't know what it is yet, but you know what it isn't, because you have others who depend on you. So as much of that's a matter of conflict, there's also in that, in some perspective, the selflessness of it, but then at the same time, the trauma of it, not because of the kids or any dependents, but this is just how society's set up and structured. There's nothing wrong with working. Everyone should do something in a society. I'm just saying that the overarching structure and what it means and needs to be reviewed, you know, what because people can work and contribute towards the well-being of others, but it can be done in a way where people feel more fulfilled.
Absolutely. Hey Toby, man. So I respect what you're saying, but essentially it brings it down to one thing from what you said to me: sacrifice.
Yes, sacrifice.
So after everything is said and done, you know, we know what we're doing to ourselves, but we're willing to make that sacrifice.
Yeah. I'll bring it home with you and me, maybe, that even though there's some value in the jobs that we do, in a way, we work in part because it's a sacrifice, because it's a way of funding not just our needs, but maybe funding some of our movements, you know, us like making steps towards where we want to get to. In order to do that, the jobs, they're also to provide a certain amount of money and resources to do something.
Yeah.
So it's almost like a means to an end, you know. That doesn't mean that the job itself has no value. We do learn on the job. We interact with people. We grow as people. We learn empathy, hopefully. You know, so those are valuable things.
Greetings, Ishmael. You just joined us chat. Nice to see you here, man. We're just catching up on... basically, we're discussing about code switching at the moment. You know, just a general sense of it. It's code switching and, you know, the reasons behind it. And ultimately, where we are right now is just the sacrifice, the things that, you know, it gets us to do that. Because especially as men, it's not necessarily our nature to code switch, because we want to lead, we're more disagreeable by nature, but we end up doing that. And so in the end, everything comes down to sacrifice. But what's the reasoning behind, you know, this sacrifice that we've chosen to make?
You've raised a really good point there about what's the reason why we choose to sacrifice. And actually, not everyone's willing to sacrifice the same to get what they want. There's a line. Someone's reason might be their passion and their purpose, like you said. Others might just be because they need to feel valued, they need to feel loved, they need to feel important, they value money. So there are a myriad of reasons why. And then that brings lines that some people are willing to cross to meet those needs or to make themselves feel better about themselves. So it's either from a place of gratitude, servitude, and altruism, or even benevolence, or it comes from the other end, which is basically a need to fulfill a hole, an insecurity, I guess, you know, as many things come down to, a need to prove yourself, a need to even to run away from who you are because of some trauma, sadly. And then there's everything in between. I mean, this is like, we often talk about, this is low hanging fruit, to be honest, in terms of an example. We often talk about politicians, especially if they're not native English, and the conflict or tension between their heritage and background and their political ideologies and their willingness to progress their career, because it means something to them, but then at what cost in terms of their own community? That's just one example.
Yes, but I think it boils down to the same thing, doesn't it?
Hmm.
Now, of course, you know, like, that's a prime job, of course. Hmm. Everybody would love the job to be a politician, despite, you know, what comes with it and so much work involved, etc., etc. But at the end of the day, it's a prime job, and it's still a sacrifice. You know, it's still buying into a culture that is not necessarily your own. Fair enough, you might have grown in the country, but unless you're an orphan or something like that, and you grew with your parents, you're still somewhat grounded by your own ethnic background pertaining culture. You get what I mean? So,
you touched a good point, and Ishmael made a good point about situations, because that can be circumstantial as well. You know, it can be quite complicated. Just to break it down a bit further in terms of culture, in the first instance, because a lot of this come down to how we grew up around culture outside of Great Britain and what was instilled in us as children.
Very true, very true. Oh, I could even argue what we witnessed as children as well. Sometimes, you know, what we see, our role models, the people we end up, you know, idolizing, these are factors that affect who we are or what we want to be.
Yeah.
That's a serious factor for a young child, because, you know, your mind is such a sponge, and to a degree that somewhat you can't help it.
You can have two people in a similar scenario as kids. This example, you can have an example where you grew up, say you grew up in a poor family, your single parent. Say I had corned beef and rice, or rice and baked beans for 2 weeks straight because you didn't have any money. And some of that's actually true, actually. That's the situations were at one point. You can either look at it, and I can either say that, oh, I don't want to be like that anymore, so I'm going to distance myself from, I'm going to say, this subculture or this environment. And that might be for the wrong reasons. I say subculture because it was like the ends, basically. And then or I can say to myself, I don't want to be in this position, but it's got nothing to do with the values or subculture I was in. It's basically me learning to also appreciate and be grateful for what it means to struggle. And that's my fuel to do better. So from that standpoint, I don't move away from my culture and what I grew up with. And if I grew up very little, I learn to respect that.
It's just another form of sacrifice, it sounds like, but somewhat more like a willingness, to the point where you're code switching to as a form of smoke screen. Until where, in the meantime, you're disciplined in the premise, until you can return back after empowering yourself to be something that you want to be, which is originally who you really are.
Yeah, but you can engage in the practice of code switching, but the way I see it, there are levels to this. So you can say you can do that, but then it doesn't mean you can forget how you grew up. You know what I mean? And remembering that whilst engaging in wearing a mask in certain environments, it's not, you're not being two-faced, because you've got that foundation. You'll always remember where you came from. And so when it comes down to you yourself, the foundation hasn't changed, but you've had to adapt certain mannerisms, whatever, about you. Yeah.
Absolutely. All right. Let's move on to something else, because I had a few other things. So this is the other thing I really wanted to kind of tap into. In reference to what Tipper Ari said again, which was, I stick to my roots. I stick to my roots. 1 second. I think somebody want to chime in. Let me just give them a chance. If not, we'll just... Hello there. Can you hear me?
OJ. How
are you there, man? You good?
Yeah.
Were you listening?
Yeah.
Did you want to speak on something?
Yeah, the OJ case.
Sorry?
The OJ.
Oh, the OJ case.
Yeah.
that was literally the other night, man. But I listened to you. What did you want to say about the OJ case?
Oh, it's okay.
Okay. That's funny. Where are we seeing this? Nah, I think he got cut.
Like, okay.
I give him another chance because he's trying to go on again.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, never mind. He's gone. The OJ case. He actually...
Better late than never, you know?
Wasn't that like last... never mind.
Yeah, it's fine.
Well, I was saying, Tipperary, I stick to my roots. And that really resonated with me. The question was, do we turn away... I think this is just a general situation, just general question. As people, do we turn away from our roots to our own detriment and downfall?
A lot of us do, yeah. No, if I say yes, I feel like I'm making a blanket statement about everyone, but so I can't say that. I'm saying yes to the sense that a lot of us do. Yeah, I think that's correct. As in, yeah.
Why do you think that?
I mean,
I'm
going to give you an example popped into my head from a good friend of mine. We had a conversation. She was telling me about a friend's son. Yeah. And he said to her, basically it was in reference to food. And they'd recently come over to the UK. And her son said to her, because she was obviously cooking like their own food, like... they're from Ghana.
Yeah.
And what he said to her was, "Mum, what are you doing? We don't need to eat poor people food anymore." No, that came in my head because I thought it was relevant to the question you're asking.
Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. I believe a lot of us do because we associate our roots with poverty, with being poor, with being less than. And we tie up the traditional philosophies and teachings, and I'm not saying they're all right because objectively there are pros and cons about every culture, but I would love to say is that they discard the culture and ways of their from wherever they're from,
yeah,
in the diaspora, because of this idea.
Hold on 1 second, because me and you are going to have this conversation for a while. Just want to ask if anybody else want to chime in, just leave a comment and I'll read it out for you. FD, did you want to maybe speak on that? The question was, do we turn away from our roots to our own detriment and downfall? You know, well, sorry about that. What were you saying now? Let's continue.
What I was saying was we attach our own culture and heritage with poverty. We obviously a lot of where we come from.
Just give me a second. Like, I need to answer him. So I'm just talking about, you know, for example, for the most part, say you migrate to another country, and now you're in a different culture, aren't you? But you still have your own culture in your household. A lot of us distance ourselves from our culture because of our new environment. So, or even people that actually grew up in their own culture, they still,
yes,
to a degree, feel to neglect their culture. So the question is, do we turn away from our roots and culture to our own detriment and downfall? That's why I break that down. My apologies for the
I'm just waiting for someone else to chime in.
It says no, I don't.
Okay. All right, so yeah, we. One of the reasons I believe we do that is because we still consider where we come from in large parts as, you know, the terms like developing country. And we're in an age of materialism, and so based on that, based on every metric.
I just saw somebody I know. Okay, we're just talking about culture, man. And the question is, do we turn away from our roots and culture to our own detriment and downfall? If you have any comments, just write it in the chat, and I'll read it out for you. But yeah, we're just having a discussion about it.
By every known metric that they measure wealth and productivity and wellness currently in the world,
yeah,
where we come from, they're generally at the bottom of the list. Now there are loads of reasons why that is. However, people get confused with this idea of materialism and technology. A, they suddenly believe that we have none of those innovations and none of the people capable of producing the same results from our own country. So they undervalue our potential and our intelligence. And B, because society is largely materialistic, we don't consider the other factors that are really, that really make the value of a human being. They don't consider other virtues. They don't consider our creativity and all the other richness that came from our culture that make a society just as much as anything else. And they don't consider, obviously, as I said, history being a complex thing, it is, all the reasons why things are as they are in the modern day.
It's interesting. Did you have more to say?
This is not just our culture, but everywhere. I've noticed there are a lot of people who have a different culture from English culture and European culture. I was speaking to someone I'm going to interview in a few days from Singapore, and then she was telling me that, England or the UK, it's like a great place and they must be really smart and fantastic. You know what I mean? That sort of like mindset.
I've heard that so many times, but carry on.
Yeah, so even on the strength of that and the other example I told you, there's still this leaning of superiority.
Yes, yeah.
So it's a real shame. I'm sure if people were more educated, they'd realise that a lot of modern art in the 20th century especially was influenced by African art. I'm sure there are loads of things, not just art, but science wasn't purely a European thing. Spirituality certainly wasn't just a European thing. And so for loads of these reasons that sort of mixed together in a cocktail, there's still a feeling of superiority, which I think actually is slowly bleeding away, if I'm honest. Mm.
Yeah, man, there's so many points to unpack when it comes to this piece. But I think for me, I'm always trying to attack, things at the heart or the pinnacle of the situation. And what stands out to me when you speak about things like this, roots. It's specifically that you're talking about roots, and for the most part a lot of us don't know our roots. And it speaks to the education that you're talking about. I'm just seeing.
Yeah, I saw that.
People say I want to chat about the OJ theory. I find that interesting. That was FD and the young man that was on earlier on. He said, "I think OJ is innocent." That's interesting. Hold on a second. Somebody wanted to. I'll give him a chance. continue. Okay. Give him a sec. So you know, when you said education, I thought to myself, that's education is a very general term, pertaining to what we're speaking about, because a lot of people are educated these days, and you know, it doesn't really seem to it doesn't seem to speak to much. Just stop the negativity in the positive life. Give it a rest. Yeah. I don't know what's going on. So yeah, like, you know, education is a very general term, but so it doesn't necessarily speak specifically about what we're speaking about. But I think what we're talking about is the roots, history, your own culture. It fits back to, you know, what we've been talking about as well. And the embracing of such. And I think for the most part, in my experience, when you're speaking about people, I think for the most part, more people are, from my experience, in my opinion, they're more followers as opposed to leaders.
Yeah, we're not talking about education you get in school. Obviously that's a baseline requirement, but you won't learn about specific cultures necessarily in your normal school education. This is outside of the academic system or even certain universities.
Not necessarily. Let's think about this, right? Just because when we talk about culture or roots, you don't necessarily have to be educated.
Yeah,
you just have to. You just, because that brings into play word of mouth. So really and truly, your grandparents could tell you about your culture, even if they don't know how to read or write. You know, it's the information being passed on. You know, that brings to mind another thing. You know, back in the days when, you know, Africa, they had the whole idea of a griot, as somebody that, you know, shares stories. Books for Us Too says, if parents expose their children to culture, this will cultivate it. Children will embrace. I would agree, but
yeah,
to an extent, because at the end of the day, there's still that external stimulus. And what I mean by that is people putting down other people's culture, or basically sharing their views, and sometimes that view might not be positive, but you know, you don't know what that impact is going to make on somebody that probably didn't share with you that, you know, talking about their culture beforehand. Yeah. And so now you're just leaving them in a corner.
This is,
that's potentially a problem as well.
This is why it's so important to have networks and people outside of academia, including family, to teach you about culture. And when I say culture, I'm talking about everything from history to how to cook certain things, you know, history of music, even their own anecdotal history and upbringing, all these things. Yeah. And we've come into an era where educating ourselves about culture is being taken on by individuals, by networks, by social groups who decide to do it themselves. You're never going to really learn a huge amount about your culture within another culture.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. You know, at the end of the day, we're kind of, you know, intertwining things now, because now you're bringing to, now we're bringing into the topic his story. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. As
opposed to the story. You're talking about
their story.
Yeah, or their story. Or, because at the end of the day, you know, history is dictated by the conquerors, not the losers. So whether your roots are great or not, if at one point it somewhat fell to a greater, or just fell at some point, and it's no longer it's no longer the winner, then I would say by default that means you're at risk at shearing or being a victim of his story, which is being the victor of the story, and somewhat that's indirectly gonna affect your culture, the way you see it, because more than not, I would argue that that's not gonna be a positive light. Even if I respect you, I still got to demean you. I still got to destroy the greatness that you stood for, because at the end of the day, even if you were the cause of me being as great as I am to the point where I now stand on your grave, I can't afford to have somebody greater. I can't afford to have a God. I can't afford to have somebody that birthed me. I have to be my own God. You understand where I'm coming from?
Yeah, so when you say you have to be your own God, are you talking about yourself, or are you talking about the idea of someone educating but also because you mentioned something about bringing you down or you know,
I guess I'm speaking just specifically this part right here. I guess I'm speaking more to the fact of, like, we're talking about his story, or just the story in general, or pertaining to conquerors. And unless you're the person that did the conquering, you're going to be victim of the story being a disadvantage, or being told where you're the cult, you're the one wearing the horns, the one that's somewhat the Antichrist. Do you get what I mean?
Yes, I get it. I know what you're saying. I mean, to be fair, this is about everything. You said this, you could say this about religions, but where you
I'm saying, like, because you know, culture is such a vast thing, it's such a wide thing. And so as much as we're trying to be specific about, you know, just migrating to a new location, to a different place, and it's very nuanced, but it's all intertwined, it's all interlinked. Just going back to the first topic that we spoke about, the fact that
people are leaving the UK.
That population is still the most part of for the most part, the voice of the unheard. Do we even care? Well, how can you care if you don't even care about your culture? Do you get what I mean?
Yeah, I agree. That's a big underlying factor.
You have to care about where you came from before all these little factors, these little things can matter to you. You know, and so it's just, I'm coming from a long way, but it's just, I'm just trying to break it down where people see the method and the madness, and understand. And I really wanted to speak about this part of it, speaking about culture, because I know everybody can relate, because we all have a culture, we all come from somewhere where, you know, somewhat a tribe and a sense of tribalism, you know, and this thing runs deep, because not only is it part of the human experience, a big part of it. I was actually watching the something from the Animal Planet the other day, and I just go through it briefly. It was pretty much a lion.
Mm.
It was a lion eating on this. One second, I think somebody's trying to chime in. One second, I'll come to you in a second. Yes, sir, can you hear me?
Hello?
Yes, how you doing?
Hi, good.
All good, man. Did you get what we were speaking about just now?
I think like about the riddle.
Sorry?
I like about the like riddle on like the education, whatever.
Yeah. Just you know, being educated about culture and how, or just your roots and how that affects you embracing who you are and your roots, you know?
I think it could affect you.
Did you have something to kind of, did you have any experience or something that could add to it?
No, I've like my whole life I've lived in the same country, so like.
So what you're, because you're from Ireland, right? So you're saying obviously because you've lived your whole life in the country, you're surrounded by your roots, your heritage, your background.
Yeah.
And what was it? Books for us. She added to it. Every country offers education. However, education is not accessible to everyone. I would agree with that. I would agree with that. But I think it was addressed to FD. Yeah. But at the same time, you know, again, like we're saying, you know, education is a broad brush. It doesn't necessarily cover specifically what we're speaking about in terms of like the culture. And so if I was to kind of, you know, throw a dart at who is responsible per se for you know, ensuring that this is expressed, or this is knowledge that, you know, the next generation hears about, understand, and you know, embraces, I would say it's the parents.
I would say they're a massive influence, definitely, because if the parents don't know any better, then you're not going to know any better. So, you know, and a lot of values and knowledge instilled from our parents gets absorbed very quickly by kids. So that's, it's like the biggest time to influence children when they're growing up, in terms of, you know, how elastic their brains are, you know, developing, and they're impressionable. So you're right. I completely agree that parents are a massive influence.
It's funny, Books for Us says she agrees. But also, on top of that, let's explore that a little bit. Isn't that a double-headed sword, though?
Yes.
You get what I mean? Because what if they haven't embraced their culture? Then yeah. What happens with you? Because they're only going to take through their lens. Again, his story. Do you get what I mean?
Well, this is where, when you're of age, and unfortunately a lot of that would have already, you've already really taken on a lot of your parents' learnings and attitudes and behaviours.
True.
This is the first time in life, though, that hopefully people have rejected their parents' view of the world. This is why it's also so important to have communities and groups. And to also, the underlying basis for this is, how do we, this is a difficult question, from a young age even, if we're talking about learning someone else's values, or if your parents don't know about their culture, have different values, okay, another way of rephrasing this, where does intuition come into play?
Intuition?
Yeah.
Intuition, so, when it comes to learning the values?
What I mean is, usually I would say that children won't know any better until they've got of an age to challenge their parents, or they have friends or an environment which challenges them, or they're curious themselves, so they go and do their own research. I use intuition to say that everyone has intuition, but even a child does, but a child is unable to, in many instances, exercise that, or even has the actual capacity to fully exercise it. And so even children may have questions about what their parents tell them to do and how to live, but will follow until they're of an age to actually try and carve out their own path in life.
Yeah.
But that's something that children have very little control over, because what can they do, you know?
Is that you, or is that it seems like you're having connection issues?
No, it's not me. I think it might have been FD because he's gone, took his turn to mic off, maybe. I don't know. But I have connection issues here.
Yeah, I think it might have been him. He's turned his mic off. All right, go on.
It's so important that from a young age, if you have questions or you have doubts about what has been instilled within you, that you're, when you get of an age and you have the opportunity to actually discover for yourself. That's why I mentioned intuition, in a sense that how do you hold on to that? Because that sometimes is the one thing that keeps people, when they get old enough, to actually challenge and actually go and examine what they've been taught.
I mean, let's be real, right? At the end of the day, your parents might tell you this and that, and it might be true, but if you're pretty much a person that, you know, you just take your parents' words as the whole world, or like, you know, this is all I need to know, then I think you're already shooting yourself in the foot to begin with, to be honest with you. You know, you're limiting yourself, the information that you're privy to. I think at the end of the day, whether your parent was real with you and they told you the truth, if you don't do yourself justice by actually going out there and being, coming from an objectivist standpoint, and do the due diligence to go out there and learn this information externally, outside of what your parents told you, I think you're doing yourself a disjustice.
Yeah, you are doing an injustice. But this also applies to whether you blindly believe in the version of British history that's been taught to you by government, or by previous generations of education, or by what politicians would tell you. So there are tiers to this. So you're right, once you come out of the locus of your parents' influence and you're curious to find out whether you think whether what they've told you is the truth, or whether you even agree with it, then there is, if that's the case, how, just because something is legal and you're obeying the law, does it mean that it's the right thing to do? Does the interpretation of any government authority hold, is it objectively true? You know,
is that a statement?
I'm making a statement. So there are levels to this, if you know what I mean. There's your parents.
Absolutely. Yeah. But I'll say it like this. You can never necessarily be an objectivist to the fullest point that's necessary until you have all the information, or you've done your due diligence to any information.
But that's so okay. You're trying to, it's okay to accept that, because you know that at some point your ideas will be challenged and you might change your mind about things. that is you're willing, as long as you're willing to accept that, because that's part of learning, that you're not, you know, that it's that you're making the effort for change or learning or growth, and yeah, then no one's gonna, you know.
I agree. I mean, don't get me wrong, like, to an extent, yeah, nobody's gonna know everything that there is to know in the world, but you can, I think it's more important to actually do the work. And what I mean by doing the work is just be as informed as possible.
So you're better off saying, if someone asks you a question, you're better off saying, I don't know, but I'm gonna find out, doing the work, rather than pretending that you do know. And that's a problem with not just parents, politicians, religious leaders. They say they know, but they don't. They think they know.
Or if you do know something, as far as I know, you know.
That's another.
You know, so, yeah, but it's very interesting. Very interesting. I think it's about that time. Gonna wrap up there. But did you have anything to say before we go?
No. I think we didn't cover the last question, but I'm looking at the time as well. So, I've really enjoyed the conversation. As I said the other night, I could have gone on for another hour, so we save some for another time.
And always appreciate you coming to have this conversation. And I appreciate everybody for tuning in, for chiming in. It has been building and it's been positive. And from now on, we will be back. It's going to be consistent. It's going to be fixed days. It's going to be from now on Sunday, Tuesday, and Thursdays every week. So just tune in and. I'll see you on, we'll be back on Tuesday. So I appreciate everyone for sharing. Of course, I am the mad poet. He is the philosopher's poet. And as you know, I'm a writer, a creator, but just for podcasting. So if you go on Amazon, type in my actual name, Alex Murdoch, you will see my books and stories that I create. And perform. If you find me on social media, you find evidence of my performance. Poet. So yes, but as always, I appreciate everyone for cheering, and thanks to everyone for commenting. Appreciate Ishmael for tuning in. I appreciate your insight as well, and your contributions. Thanks so much, and we will be back on Tuesday. Thanks, everyone. Take care.